Welcome to Retro Rewind, Now Central's new sports-themed podcast that tells the stories of former Pinal County athletes and memorable events in local sports history. I am your host, Brian Wright, and I am joined by my co-host, Maria Vasquez. Our podcast is brought to you by Crossroads Auto Center, Pinal County's best used car dealer for the last 25 years. All right, well, welcome to our first Retro Rewind podcast, and our first guest is Dennis Fitzgibbons. He is an attorney here in Casa Grande and was recently elected president of the Arizona State Bar. So congratulations to you, Dennis, on that.
Thank you.
And what some people may not know is that Dennis had a high school sports career right here in Casa Grande for Casa Grande Union. And my first question is, you know, Dennis, we're going to get into talking about football, but I guess that, you know, you played other sports at Union High School as well. And before you became the starting quarterback as a senior, you kind of had a little bit of a detour and you weren't even playing football for a couple
right.
of years. So
right.
Tell us about kind of how the timeline of your athletics career at Union played out.
When I went to Casa Grande, my family moved to Casa Grande when I was in fifth grade, so that was about 1974. So I played Pop Warner football in town, and then when I went to the junior high, I didn't play football at junior high, but I played freshman football at Casa Grande High School, and then I did not play as a sophomore or junior football because I played basketball. I really enjoyed basketball. I had a slight problem with my knees during that time, but basketball was my first love, and so I played basketball. And my sophomore year, I got Joe Partain was here, and I know I got called up. They used to play at Hobbs New Mexico basketball tournament, so I got to travel with them to Hobbs to play in the tournament, and they had a very good team. I mean, Randy Robbins was on that team, Donnie Haygood probably graduated, but Randy Allen, I mean, those guys had a very good basketball team. Spence Martinez, I'm trying to think of all the names, but Robbins and those guys. And then Joe Partain was a coach, but his son David Partain was on that team, and David was a junior that year. He was a year ahead of me, and so we had... Those guys were a good team. We had a good team the following year. Basketball teams, both of them played in the playoffs. Joe Partain was a phenomenal coach. He had come to Casa Grande after coaching in Coolidge for several years. He had several championships in Coolidge and then came to Casa Grande. He coached until my end of my junior year. My senior year, he took the coaching job at Chandler High School, and so that's when Bruce Kieser came in, and Kirk Kieser was a senior when I was a senior, so Kirk and I are in the same class, so we had the benefit of playing for both coaches, and as you know, that can get very strange because you're used to one coach, and you're used to playing a certain style, and I didn't get to basketball until late that year, my senior year, because of football. Football ran a little bit longer, and so one of my first basketball practices, Coach Kieser, one of the best teams in the state at the time, was a team called East High, and I don't think East High even exists anymore, but they had some phenomenal talent. I mean, they had Division I players every year, guys that went on to play at ASU and U of A, and so when I got out to basketball practice, Bruce Kieser was telling everybody about what it was going to take to beat East. And, you know, even though Bruce had a state championship from Wisconsin, I was just, you know, kind of a dumb senior in high school and thought, this is ridiculous. He's never seen East High. He doesn't know what it's like. And but anyway, so after my first practice with Bruce Kieser, he called me in and... because he knew I was dogging it, and basically said, I'm not going to tolerate it. You need to decide whether you want to play basketball or not. I won't let you play on my team if you play like this, if you ever have a practice like this. And so, but he was very good about it. He knew there was a change, and he knew it was difficult for a teenage kid to take on a change like that. And so he also let me say my piece before he kind of lit me up with his statement to me. And I just kind of told him, hey, you know, my thoughts about what he was talking about, East and everything like that. And I think he probably laughed at me when I walked out the room, but he made it very clear that I would never dog it in one of his practices again. And and back then, Joe Partain was still in town. I went over because I was dumb enough to think I could transfer mid-season. Coach Partain explained he couldn't do that. And, you know, those guys were just good life coaches. I mean, they both Coach Kieser and Coach Partain were just quality individuals and, you know, knew that it was a hard time, knew what it would take. And Coach Partain basically told me, you better go back there, you better play as hard as you can play. And I got that also from my dad at home. So that's what we did.
And, so senior year then, you played both basketball and football.
Right. Senior year, I played both. So, and I played basketball. When I was like a sophomore and junior, Coach Cashner, John Cashner, was the football coach. And so he always knew that a college basketball career was not in the cards for me. I mean, he used to sit in the corner where they used to take tickets, and they'd be like, that was about a 3-inch jump. Oh, that might have been a 2.5-inch. I don't know if you cleared the ground that time. I mean, Cashner was just a funny guy. And, you know, he just knew that, you know, there wasn't a lot of guys going on to play basketball. There were some. Kenny Hoare went on to play basketball in the Midwest. There were a couple guys that had gone on to play. I mean, Tim Wise from my year played in CAC and then played in Oklahoma. But Cashner knew that there was a lot more opportunity in football. And so he was somebody who just said, hey, if you commit to me, I'll commit to you. And that's what I did. And I mean, I can't say enough about what John Cashner did. I mean, he opened up a world to us because we grew up here. You went to CAC, you went to ASU, you went to U of A. You never really thought of other schools. Sure, once in a while there were people going on to the military academies, but, you know, you never really thought of other schools. And Cashner had just gotten Kevin into West Virginia. He had gotten Randy into U of A. And I know those guys would all both say that it was all because of John Cashner. It was his dedication to them and his dedication to, he wanted to make sure that although you were an athlete, that it paid off in your education. And I know he worked so hard to get Randy into U of A, and he had several others that he got into colleges before all that. So it wasn't like, you know, when he was saying to you, hey, there's a future in college. You could, you know, he had stuff to back it up because he had several players that he had already put to the next level, and especially Randy at that time. You know, Ray Crockett was another one that went on. Jackie Allen, all those guys went on to play at the next level. And so I, you know, followed Cashner and worked out with him every day, and he did exactly what he did. I mean, he sometimes you weren't always sure what Cashner told them about you when you got there because they would, you know, they couldn't test you or anything like that. So there wasn't a lot of camps and there wasn't a lot of video. And there was some video on you, but, you know, so a lot of the things they'd do a lot of times would get you to play basketball or get you, because they just kind of wanted to see what kind of athlete, because they couldn't do it. I think the NCAA back then restricted a lot of that stuff. And so they had other ways to try to figure out, you know, how competitive you were and things like that. But, I mean, Cashner, I couldn't say enough to the different schools he got me to go to.
Is it fair to say that, you know, let's go back to the summer before your senior year. You hadn't played football in a couple of years. Did Cashner kind of see something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself?
Yeah, I think Cashner, I played quarterback as a freshman, and I think Cashner knew that, I think he knew I had a good work ethic, and I think he knew I'd put in the time. And so I think he knew, given time through the spring and summer, he could develop me in, you know, into playing quarterback. I mean, not that he was making me do anything really complicated. I don't think I ever had to throw really hard throws or anything like that. But, I mean, I knew he knew what he could get out of me, and he got me to that level. So,
what kind of offense were you running? I'm assuming it was largely a run-based offense.
Yeah, kind of a wing-T offense, I think is what he would call it. I think that's primarily what it was. I mean, we'd run a power eye, things like that, but typically sometimes a kind of a wing-T type offense.
And when you finished your senior year, I mean, it wasn't like, Casa Grande wasn't some powerhouse program, right? So, I mean, I don't know how you thought your college opportunities might play out, but then you do end up going on to play college football. So, mm-hmm. so describe how that played out.
I mean, that was all, I mean, John Cashner. I mean, I think when I finished playing high school, I thought I'd go on to ASU and, and luckily I was going right into basketball, so I didn't have to deal with that part of your senior year where you're like, is this my last game? Will I ever play again or anything like that? And so, so I went into basketball. But then Cashner was telling me, hey, there's some interest here. There's interest here. He had me, take a trip to Colgate. I took a trip to Columbia during kind of toward the end of the basketball season. But I still was going out on weekends for these trips. And so, he was telling me, hey, you can play. I know you can play at that level. You just got to decide where you want to go. And Cashner also got me into West Point. I mean, he didn't by himself get me into West Point, but he got West Point to recruit me, and then they got me in. So I got into West Point too at the time. And then it just became kind of a choice between West Point and Columbia and where I really wanted to go. So
tell me about that decision-making process on how you ended up choosing Columbia.
I think I was kind of fascinated by New York City, and Columbia was a tough place to play football because the school's on 116th Street, the football facilities are 212th Street. It's basically, taking a bus to practice every day, it's with all that traveling, it's tough. Now, they've built a field house down on the campus. They can do more things on the campus. But really, their football field and real facilities are almost 100 blocks away on the north tip of Manhattan. But still, just the intrigue of New York City and, going to an Ivy League school, I think, was I'm going to show my age here, but when I went to Columbia, it was an all-male school. And so it was the last of the Ivies that was all-male. We went co-ed when I was a sophomore. And so it was, I just, the military side of me, I it was interesting, it was intriguing, but I just thought Columbia just had so, I thought for me, New York City and that had so much more opportunity. I was glad, obviously, my parents let me make that decision. After I made the decision, my dad was looking at some material on West Point, and he had come in one Saturday and asked me if I had contacted West Point to let him know I'm not coming. And I said, no, I hadn't contacted him. And he told me who to contact, pointed to a guy in the brochure and said, I want you to contact this guy. And so I remember the guy's name. His name was Colonel Skiordway. But my dad didn't really tell me why he wanted me to contact that guy. And I'm sure I didn't ask. I'm a senior. I was probably too much of a punk to ask my dad. But I remember calling Colonel Ordway and just said, hey, I decided not to come. I'm going to Columbia. And he said, thank you very much. I appreciate you telling me that. And then there was kind of silence on the phone. And I said, Colonel Ordway, my dad wanted me to call you. And all of a sudden there's silence for a second. He goes, son, is your dad Dave Fitzgibbons? I go, yeah, that's my dad. And he goes, oh my goodness, I did not know that. I did not know you were Dave's son. And I said, he asked me to call you. He goes, he didn't tell you who I was, did he? He goes, no, he didn't. And he goes, you tell your dad I'm really sorry. He said, when I saw your name come up on the board and it came out of Arizona, I just never thought you could be Dave's son. He said, your dad, he goes, last time I saw your dad is he was getting on a helicopter in Korea to go back to Iowa to practice law with his brothers. He said, we were tent mates in Korea. And so I kind of glad I had already made the decision, because I think if I would have learned that earlier, I might have ended up at West Point. But when I was a freshman in college, freshmen in the Ivies only played freshmen. They wouldn't let freshmen play junior varsity or varsity. And so my freshman year toward the end, we played West Point's junior varsity team. And Colonel Ordway coached that team. And so it was the only game my dad came back to ever watch me play. So he and Ordway saw each other after that game for a bit. So that was probably a nice part of the so they got to reconnect after all those years.
All right. So, Dennis, what was that transition like for you, going from a small town of Casa Grande and everything you learned on the field to New York City and Columbia, an Ivy League school?
It was a difficult transition because of the vastness of New York City, but in some ways it wasn't as hard. I mean, because in the sense of, Casa Grande is just a really diverse place. And I think that's the beauty of Casa Grande, Central Arizona, is there's just such a diversity here. So you deal with a lot of different people. So when you dealing with your teammates wasn't bad at all. I mean, you were used to dealing with a lot of different type people and things like that. But the schoolwork was the hardest. I mean, football was kind of football, and in because you're playing freshman football, it took a lot of the pressure off. So you were still playing with kids your age. So it wasn't like you're going in at 18 playing with 22-year-olds. And, and you didn't practice with them either. Back then, the Ivies, it was a separate program altogether. It's not that way anymore. And now the Ivy, the freshmen can play any level. But back then, it was really separated. So that it helped you with the transition for football, because for the most part, you're like taking a post-grad year almost, playing with a bunch of other 19-year-old guys now. The transition in the class was the hardest. I mean, the school was a lot more intense. The education was a lot more intense. And that part of it, I think, I found really difficult. And so much so, I was, after my first year, I was like, I'm not sure I'm coming back to this place, because this was pretty intense. So I remember coming home my freshman year, I brought all my stuff. My parents were like, don't they have locker storage areas where you can keep some of this stuff? I didn't have the heart to tell them I wasn't going back. But at the end of the summer, I went back.
And your football experience at Columbia, now they had you play a few different positions, right?
Right. I went back freshman. So I think freshman football, you could play where you wanted to play. I mean, it was kind of, they would kind of try to encourage you to move. But so I ended up playing quarterback as a freshman, but then ended as a strong safety. I switched over and played defense. And really, my sophomore year, I played a little outside linebacker, but it was more of a strong safety. We called it a linebacker position. It was really a strong safety position.
And then, at some point, you had a coaching change.
Yes.
And things really were different when you had Jason Garrett's father. You'll have to tell me.
For me, it was John Garrett's father.
Okay.
Because John was a year behind me at Columbia. And Columbia was, I mean, they were into one of the longest losing streaks ever. And Sports Illustrated had a huge article, I think, when I was a junior. And that's when Sports Illustrated had that quote where they said Columbia College was one of the first schools to ever play college football. They just never learned the sport. So kind of a harsh term. And so after that, so when I was a sophomore, John Garrett was a freshman, and then Jason Garrett came in the next year. So my junior year, Jason was on the freshman team. John was on the varsity team with me. So we had two of the Garrett brothers. And then my junior year is when they fired the coach that recruited me. They hired John's father, Jim Garrett. And Jim Garrett, was a really well-known kind of football coach at that time because he had been in the USFL coaching. He had also been a scout for the Cowboys. And he was just an absolute great guy. He was a very intense guy, but he was a great guy, and he was definitely going to turn that program around once and for all. And then when Jim came, then the last of the brothers, I think it's the last of the brothers, Judd. So all three brothers were there, Judd, John, and Jason, and when their father was there. Jim Garrett, the coach, there were going to be changes. And some of the stuff we got away with my first 3 years, we just weren't getting away with anymore. And it was great. The intensity was great. But there were certain things, I had to get a class out of the way. And Mr. Garrett was like, "Oh, you just take that next year. You just take an extra semester." I'm like, "Coach Garrett, my parents aren't going to pay for an extra semester. There's no way I'm staying here for an extra semester." But he was. He was a very demanding guy. He was a very good football coach. His boys were all great guys. But after that first year, he did turn the program around. They did win a few games. But I just think the trustees at the university were saying, this is just too high of a price. So all the boys ended up graduating from Princeton because his dad took them all out. But they were originally all at Iowa. They were originally all at Columbia at the same time. I remember, I was a floor counselor my senior year. Judd Garrett was on my floor my senior year that I was a floor counselor. He was a freshman. And I think his roommate was Justice Gorsuch from the Supreme Court, who was also on that floor at the time. And they were all freshmen all together. So.
Now, Jim Garrett's strict adherence to the athletic side, maybe not caring as much about the academic side, that led to you leaving the football team, right?
Right. That led. I just decided at the end of my summer, going into the fall, that I wasn't going to play. And I don't want to say he believed in obviously education. His kids are all Ivy educated guys. He truly believed in it. It's just, I think for us was growing up in that system, thinking we could, because it was not unusual for upperclassmen not to show up for like a Monday, Tuesday practice. That's just the way that Columbia was back at the time. There was a reason we had that big of a losing streak. And so we were used to it. And so we expected it, especially when you got to your senior year. If you hadn't taken a lab or you needed some class in your major to graduate, you just assumed you weren't going to school on Tuesday. That's just the way it was. And I think Coach Garrett thought that was the craziest thing he'd ever heard in his life. But he respected academics. It's just he expected a total commitment. And just the way the guy was. He was a great guy. And I understood. He and I had a nice conversation when I told him what I needed and what I couldn't do. And he understood that. And he just said, "Hey, I can't run my program that way." And I said, "I understand that. I don't want you to bend the rules for me or anything like that." And I've always remained friends with his, John was just a year behind me. And John a couple years ago, well, now it's been many years, but coached for the Cardinals for a while. And it goes way back because it was when the ASU quarterback was with the Cardinals. And Trestman was out here because John was out kind of learning the West Coast offense. And uh, so uh, But John's now. Jake Plummer. Jake Plummer. And so, and that's a great story because John's just as intense as his dad. And he and Jake were pretty funny because that was a story, a whole other story. But, they're intense. I mean, and I'm sure Jason, when he coached the Cowboys, they're good guys, but they're great human beings. And they were all raised that way. And it was a pleasure knowing the guys. So.
All right. And going back to your Columbia days, you guys had the losing streak. They're switching you to all these different positions. You have a new coach coming in. How did you adjust with all those different changes?
You know, I probably didn't adjust well because I didn't. I mean, I was there for the spring practices and everything like that. But I probably just didn't really adjust that well. I enjoyed the new coaches. I mean, there was a whole new energy. And you could tell these guys were phenomenal coaches. A lot of ex-NFL players had come in to help Coach Garrett. And you knew they were going to build something. Given time, they were going to build something pretty special there. But I obviously still enjoyed the practices. I still enjoyed spring workout. I still enjoyed the weightlifting side of it and all that stuff. But just when it came down to one season was coming on and I realized I had the conflict in the classroom, I was more of a just I'm not going to be able to make it work. And that was tough because, you're there for 3.5 years or 3 years with those guys and you expect to see them all the time. And that's the sad, the sad part of it when you don't play. But you don't see them as much and everything like that. So that my adjustment afterwards was tough, but it still was my senior year. I had a lot going on, and so I had a lot of different things to keep me busy at the time. So
how do you make that decision? Because, I mean, the athlete in you, it wants to compete. It wants to keep going. So how did you come up to the decision that, okay, it's time to step away from the game?
You know, for me, I mean, I kind of felt like I didn't really have a lot of choices at the time. I think I loved to compete, and it was finding where you could compete after that. And so, sure, you got intramurals and things like that, but, we were in Manhattan. So I had a brother-in-law and I who loved basketball. So we were probably in Riverside Park, where some of the best street basketballs played. And so you still got to fulfill your competition. You still got to deal with that part of it. And maybe it was easier for me because I wasn't in love with football. I mean, football was a means to an end for me. It got me into Columbia. It got me there. But I wasn't in love with it. I enjoyed the sport. I enjoyed the camaraderie of the team. I liked that part of it. But it wasn't one of those things where it wasn't like basketball to me. Basketball is such a unique sport, and I just didn't have the physical skills to keep playing basketball at that level. But so probably to get the competition side of it, I luckily had a brother who's now my brother-in-law. It wasn't my brother-in-law at the time. He was a roommate of mine, and so we would hang out from time to time at Riverside Park, where you would, learn of legendary street basketball players that played in that area. And it was, it was still, you got the competition side of it, not at the level of a college football game, but you still got it in some ways.
And I want to switch gears for just a moment while we wrap up here. And that is after Columbia, you end up going to law school at Arizona State. And you end up somehow having members of the Gin Blossoms crash at your place. Now, the Gin Blossoms, for people who don't know, were one of the biggest rock bands in the United States in the early to mid-1990s. So, Dennis, tell us about that.
Yeah, we didn't know it at the time either. So it had to be later 80s because one of our roommates at the time was a guy named Bob Sullivan, who the Sullivan family has been in Casa Grande forever. Jerry Sullivan's brother used to run Parks and Rec for a long time here. But Bob was our roommate, and at that time, Bob was working at a bar called Minder Binders that was in Tempe, McClintock and University, I think. It used to be a big bar, but it had live music. And so Bob would tell us about this band and how good they were and everything. And then from time to time, these band that was so good was would be sleeping on the floor or would come home with Bob after. And little did we know, it ended up being the Gin Blossom. So I feel bad that we weren't able to spot that talent at a young age. But and that was, yeah, when they were just starting out. And both brothers were in the band at the time. And so it was pretty funny. So, you know, you never know who's on your couch sometimes when you're in college.
Well, Dennis, we want to thank you so much for joining us and being our first guest here on the Retro Rewind podcast.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it very much. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Pinal Central's Retro Rewind podcast, brought to you by Crossroads Auto Center, Pinal County's best used car dealer for the last 25 years. Remember to go to PinalCentral.com and our Facebook page to access future podcasts, as we will have new episodes every Wednesday. We will catch you next time.